The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
What is the meaning and nature of faith in the New Testament? Well, that's what we're going to talk about on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. I am quite thrilled to have you along with us today because we have a very important question that came from a listener not so unlike yourself. If you have questions, I hope you'll send them to us, radio@faithalone.org. Well, let's get right to this very important discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
All right, welcome back to the show. We're taking your questions. Here is one from Chase. And Chase says, I just received a new study Bible, and I'm curious about the thoughts being presented about John 3:16. The study Bible states that belief in the New Testament denotes more than intellectual assent to a fact. Uh-oh.
A bad start. You think you know where we're going? Yeah.
Furthermore, it states the word pistuo means adherence to, committal to, faith in, reliance upon, trust in a person or object. This involves not only the consent of the mind, but an act of the heart and will of the subject. Whoever believes in him is equivalent to whoever trusts or commits himself to him, end quote. Any thoughts regarding this would be extremely helpful. This is from Chase.
Okay, so Chase, I would suggest get a new study Bible. But think of it this way. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever commits himself to him should not perish, but has everlasting life. Isn't that what that study Bible is saying?
That would be one that of the
to believe in things, him yeah. is to commit oneself to him.
Rely upon, and, yeah.
But doesn't it specifically say commit
yeah,
oneself
commit,
to
him? Yeah, commit himself to him, yeah.
So, you would also read, for example, John 6:47. He who believes in me has everlasting life. What that really means is he who commits himself to me has everlasting life. John 11:26, Jesus says, he who lives and believes in me shall never die. Yeah. That really would mean he who lives and commits himself to me shall never die. And then he says, do you believe this? And that would mean what? Do you commit yourself to me or do you commit yourself to this teaching? And what would committing yourself to this teaching mean? It seems to me that what you have here is what's common in evangelicalism today. People want to say, I believe in justification by faith alone, apart from works, but they don't really believe it, so then they define believing in Jesus as committing yourself to him, as yeah. following him, as obeying him.
It just changes the words, just changes the meaning of the words. It's like very, you know, it's like 1984, Orwell's 1984. They just kind of change something to mean the exact opposite. Like, for example, I was just reading about, I just read a quote. You might have heard, we're recording at a time when Elon Musk, you know, the founder of,
right.
I think he did PayPal, which is how he initially got his money, then Tesla and now SpaceX. He said he wanted to buy Twitter to make it a free speech platform. And someone said, Elon Musk wants people to be able to say whatever they want to say, which is not free speech. And the conservative person was like, what do they think free speech is if they don't think it means letting people say whatever they want to say? They must be defining free speech as something totally different, like kind of acceptable opinion, you know.
Well, you know, it used to be that free speech was free except when your use of your speech could demonstrably hurt other people, like yelling fire in a crowded
right.
theater.
Right, but that has been expanded to include, like, anyone's feelings about anything.
Well, now it's like if you say that, didn't they just eliminate the mask mandate on airlines
they did,
and
yeah.
things like that? Well, someone could say that's not a proper use of free speech, because by saying you don't have to do that, you could be hurting people in terms of their health.
Right.
And so some people would say you can't have that free speech. And so you can see how it gets tricky.
It does get tricky.
It gets kind of murky if someone says, I don't think you should vaccinate your children for measles or smallpox.
Right.
Should they be permitted to say that? I don't think that's a good idea, well, by the way.
Right.
But is someone free to say that? It's
right,
like,
right, right.
I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, you know, there's some libertarians who'd say everything we've talked about right now is not free speech. It's all different gradations of restricted speech.
How
and
so?
It's, because you're restricting. You can't say this because it might hurt someone. You might say can't say that. You can't. As long as you say you can't say something, then you don't believe in free speech anymore. You believe in restricted speech, but it's very Orwellian that we still keep calling that free speech. And that's my point is, you know, we redefine terms so they don't mean what they originally mean anymore, right? We're talking about free speech, but really what we're talking about is restricted speech, but we're calling it free speech. What I'm saying, the same thing happens with the word believe. People change believe into works, into committing, into changing your behavior, into they change it, they turn it into the opposite of what the word actually means.
Okay, I got you.
You know what I'm saying? It seems to me that's what's happened with the study Bible here. Although, you know, if you go to, let's say, BDAG. BDAG is the big New Testament Greek lexicon. And here's what
which you have in your lap there.
I have it here in front of me. Here's how it defines pistuo.
And by the way, this thing's about 5 pounds. It's about 5 pounds. Huge.
And under pistuo, there is 1, 2, 3 pages. The first definition is to consider something to be true and therefore worthy of one's trust. Believe.
Right.
That's what we would say. That's when Jesus promises you everlasting life in John 3:16. Remember, that's what the question is from Chase.
Right.
He's asking you, do you believe that what he's saying is true?
Right.
That's what believe is. It doesn't mean committing to him.
No, it means, is this trustworthy?
Yeah.
Is this something that is believable?
Are you taking him at his word?
Yeah. Someone.
But then it goes on to the second definition that it gives here is to entrust oneself to an entity in complete confidence. Believe in. And then it says, implication of total commitment to the one who is trusted. So it's not like the study Bible is totally making it up. This is under the second definition in BDAG.
What's interesting, we have an article from Michael McAdon at our website that shows the earlier version, before it was called BDAG, it was called BAGDI. And that version, which you also have in your hand
I think
now,
I have that one. Yeah, let's see. I'm
that version actually did not have that statement you just read about the complete commitment. That was a theological addition added by the editors.
Oh, man. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. And it's kind of weird how theological bias can even creep into dictionaries.
So, yeah, the second edition says, first definition, be convinced of something that which one believes in. So be convinced of something. Are you convinced that John 3:16 is true or not?
Right.
Under the second definition, belief in a special sense, being convinced, in addition to being convinced that he exists, that his revelations or disclosures are true. I don't know.
They do have something because the idea of entrusting something or committing something to someone is a use of pistuo.
Yeah, so it's number 3, entrust something to someone.
And that's what you have in John Chapter 2 and verse 24, Jesus did not entrust himself to them.
Yeah.
But when it means entrust, guess what the translators translate it? Entrust.
Right, yeah.
So when you see the translators translate John 3:16 as believing in him, they're perfectly capable of recognizing that sometimes it means to commit or entrust.
Right.
And it's God doing the committing or entrusting in John 2:24, or he's not doing it because these people are not ready to confess him.
But it would be a mistake to take every single definition of the word pistuo and then to say every time it occurs, it means all of those different definitions.
Exactly.
Which is what the study Bible seems to be doing. It's just taking every single possible meaning of pistuo and saying that's what John 3:16 means.
Right.
Whereas really what they should say is they should look at the context and they should say, okay, what is the best definition for this context? In John 2, it's entrust, but in John 3:16, it's believe in the sense of be persuaded or be convinced.
Right.
So yeah, Chase, you might want to get a different study Bible.
Well, you know, it's kind of like I've used this illustration before. During the height of the pandemic, the president of the United States was promising that he was going to send out stimulus checks to every person, right?
Yeah.
Well, if I said, Sean, do you believe in President Biden and you believe his promise to give us $1,200 or $600 per person stimulus check? If you said yes, it would have nothing to do with whether you were committed to President Biden or committed to his agenda or anything else. It would have to do with, are you convinced he's going to send us a stimulus check?
Are you persuaded or not?
And I would believe in him in that sense, and I did. But another way of believing in him would be something like when approval ratings come out and you say, do you believe in this president in the sense that you believe he's going to do a good job for our country in terms of inflation, say?
Yeah, yeah.
And now people are basing their decision not on whether he's going to send out a stimulus check. Well, in fact, those stimulus checks have caused inflation.
Right, yeah.
We all were happy to get them, and now we're not so happy when the prices go up. But guess what? There's a direct correlation between giving us all this money, which is printing all this money.
Yeah, Austrian Economics 101.
That's, you know, Austrian Economics?
Yes, everyone should check it out. Ludwig von Mises or Murray Rothbard. If you increase the money supply, that is inflation, and we've increased this money supply, and then the increase in prices is just a result of inflation. But anyways.
Well, you always surprise me. You come up with these people. You didn't make up those names. Those are real people.
No, those are major guys.
Okay, all right.
Also, I think another evidence of Jewish genius and the existence of God. You know, one of my arguments is Jewish genius is an evidence of the existence of God. And not only did Jewish people invent, you know, communism, I'm thinking of Karl Marx.
Right.
But they're also the forefront leaders of capitalism. Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard were really the articulators of capitalism, capitalism.
Oh, okay. So
you have Jewish geniuses on both sides. And check out my article about that, actually, if anyone's interested. Jewish genius and the existence of God. It's in our Journal of the Grace Evangelical Society. I think it's, $9.95 for a year's subscription?
Yeah, and you pointed out, and I still remember this, that the average IQ in the world today is 100. But the average IQ among Jewish people is 112, right?
Yeah, it was like Ashkenazi Jews, and it was 112 or 115, I forget what it was, but it's the highest in the world on average.
By the way, quick story on that.
Yeah.
I played duplicate bridge, and I was visiting with a friend named Jack who's Jewish, and I told him about your article, and he said, oh, yeah, you know, when I was in eighth grade, they did an IQ test on us, and I found out my IQ was 166.
So you're talking about average IQs, but once you get to that genius level, it's not exclusively Ashkenazi Jewish people, but it's when you get to that level of genius, it's almost exclusively God's chosen people.
Right.
That's a sign of God's blessing, I think, and usually it's used to bless the whole world.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to explore more of the topics that we talk about on this show and don't know where to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you where. It's at faithalone.org. That's our website, faithalone.org. On the site, we have all kinds of free resources that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. For example, we have this beautifully laid out full-color magazine that you can get a free subscription. Just go to faithalone.org and sign up on the site. Would you like to become a financial partner with this show? Well, if so, you can find out how to do that on faithalone.org. All gifts are tax-deductible and very much appreciated because it's how we stay on the air. By the way, we love to hear from our listeners. Maybe you've got a comment, feedback, or even a question. If you do, I'll give you our email address so that you can reach out to us. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about, is the Gospel of John the first and only clear-cut teaching about eternal salvation in the Bible? So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.